The implication, then, is that male and female, earth and sky, all sorts of clan resentments, all of these tensions are at least in potential capable of being resolved by law, by persuasion. That's undercut to some degree. Athena's not really a woman, fully, and it's she who cast the deciding vote. It's a tie before that. Nonetheless, there is a communal celebration of this progress towards the kind of communal rationality that's embodied in law. You could call it the Nike, the victory of DK justice. A nifty little mnemonic. The Nike of DK. Well, what you might ask is tragic about that. That doesn't sound so tragic. That sounds celebratory. And it is celebratory in a way, but in an almost Jobian sense, in the Greek tragic vision, no human solution is ever final. The fact that the vote was a tie in the Oresteia suggests as much. I want now to turn to one other representative work, this by Euripides, the youngest of the three great and the three surviving Greek dramatists. In his last play, written in 405, The Bacchae, times now are not so celebratory. In our next lecture, I'll be talking about the Greek historians Herodotus and Thucydides. Herodotus wrote about the Persian Wars, which were a triumph for Greece. Thucydides wrote about the Peloponnesian Wars, which saw the destruction of classical Greece. And it's in that period and in that frame of mind that Euripides, as an old man, writes the Bacchae, the worshippers of Bacchus. The plot's simply told. A young king called Pentheus is told that Bacchus, Dionysus, under another name, has come. And he refuses to worship Dionysus because he is offended by the rites with which Dionysus is celebrated, in particular by the woodland all-female Dionysiac festivals whose participants were called Maenads. And he imprisons Dionysus. And as a result, Dionysus drives him mad. And in his mad state, Pentheus, this young king, is consumed by a desire to watch the female revelers of Dionysus, his mother among them. And as he is watching, they see him, and in their Dionysiac ecstasy, they mistake him for a lion and tear him to pieces with their bare hands. And his mother brings back, as her ecstasy wears off, in celebration, the head of the lion she has helped to kill, and comes to recognize the lion's head as the head of her own son. A gruesome story, but a story that illustrates the sense of fundamental unresolvedness that characterizes the Greek tragic vision. During the 19th century, the celebrated German philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche began his philosophical career by focusing his attention on Greek tragedy, identifying in the work The Birth of Tragedy two impulses seeking reconciliation in tragedy. And he called these impulses Dionysian on one hand, the joyful, ecstatic, terrifying and anarchic vision of Dionysus, and Apollonian on the other, the orderly, rational, balanced, coherent vision of Apollo. His claim is that tragedy seeks to negotiate the tensions between these two modes of vision, which have to be resolved, but which are finally and fundamentally irresolvable.